Imagine for just a second that you're trying to uncover this really crucial piece of information,
Right.
something that directly affects your life or your community or, you know, maybe your business. You know for a fact the data exists.
Yeah, you're sure of it.
But when you actually go looking for it, you just hit this massive, completely silent bureaucratic wall. You knock and there is just no answer at all.
Nothing. Just crickets.
Exactly. And that silence isn't just annoying, right? It's a literal structural barrier that keeps you locked out of the systems governing your everyday life. So today's deep dive is into a legal mechanism that was built to dismantle that exact wall.
It really is. We are looking at South Africa's Promotion of Access to Information Act of 2000, or as it's commonly known, PAIA.
PAIA. And our mission today is to basically extract the blueprints of this landmark legislation.
Yeah, we have the primary source material right here, the actual text of the act.
Right.
And we are going to decode how a nation legally engineers transparency, you know, how it balances that with privacy and creates a real mechanism for citizens to just demand the truth.
And for you listening, I mean, this isn't just dry legal stuff. Whether you're dealing with a tangled government bureaucracy or like a secretive private corporation, understanding this is universally relevant, especially in our data-driven world.
Oh, absolutely. It's a masterclass in information architecture.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the text of the act doesn't just jump into a list of rules.
No, it doesn't.
It actually starts with this incredibly blunt historical confession right in the preamble.
It really does not mince words there.
Yeah.
The preamble explicitly points out that the government system in South Africa before April 27, 1994, basically resulted in a secretive and unresponsive culture.
Right, in both public and private bodies.
Exactly. Secrecy wasn't just a side effect of the previous regime. It was like the default operating system.
Wow.
And the text notes that this culture frequently led to the abuse of power and, you know, serious human rights violations.
So to reverse that, you have Section 32 of the new South African Constitution, which guarantees the right of access to any information held by the state.
Yes. And PAIA is the national legislation enacted to actually give effect to that constitutional right.
But wait, if the Constitution already guarantees it, why do you even need a secondary act? I mean, if I have a right to free speech, I don't need a talking act to let me speak.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, transparency isn't just this philosophical ideal you can just declare and then walk away from.
Right.
Think of the Constitution as the architect's beautiful high-level blueprint.
Oh, I like that.
But PAIA is the actual bricks, the mortar, the scaffolding that makes the building functional. Because the act acknowledges that rights have to be balanced.
Balanced against what exactly?
Against reasonable limitations like privacy, commercial confidentiality, and just effective governance.
Oh, sure.
You can't just throw open every government and corporate filing cabinet without causing massive collateral damage.
Yeah, that tension totally makes sense. Having a theoretical right means nothing if you don't know who has the files or like what the rules are. Which leads us to how the act divides the world into two distinct arenas.
Right. Public bodies and private bodies.
Let's break those down. What exactly counts as a public body here?
So public bodies include your standard state departments, provincial administrations, municipalities, basically the government in all its forms.
Okay, pretty straightforward. And private bodies.
That covers a massive spectrum. It means natural persons carrying on a trade, partnerships, or any juristic person.
So like corporations.
Exactly. Multinational corporations, local businesses, even a private individual acting commercially.
Now, what's wild to me is that most freedom of information laws around the world only target the government.
Yeah, they usually do.
So targeting the private sector this aggressively is a huge feature of this act. But the threshold to get information changes depending on which door you knock on, right?
It changes drastically. For public bodies, it's a general right. You ask for a record, and generally they have to give it to you.
Okay.
But for private bodies, you have to prove that the record is required for the exercise or protection of any rights.
Wait. Let me push back on that for a second. So I can't just demand internal records from a private corporation purely out of curiosity.
No, you definitely cannot.
Like, I actually have to prove I'm protecting a specific right.
You do. The law really respects private enterprise here.
Yeah.
You can't just use PAIA to go on a fishing expedition through a company's internal emails.
That's fascinating. But surely the government has an easier time getting private data, right?
Actually, no. And this is a brilliant legal friction point. Even public bodies, if they're requesting info from a private body for rights other than their own, They have to prove they are acting in the public interest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The state cannot just bully private enterprises for data on a whim.
So it stops the government from using transparency laws as, like, a backdoor surveillance tool?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. While still maintaining corporate accountability.
Okay, so we know who we're asking and the burden of proof. But how does an everyday person actually navigate this? Because bureaucracy is famously good at making simple things impossible.
Oh, absolutely. But the act leaves nothing to chance. Every public body must designate what they call deputy information officers.
And their whole job is just handling this.
Pretty much. Plus, they have to publish a manual detailing all their records. And they have to do it in at least 3 official languages.
3? Out of the, what, dozen official languages in South Africa?
Yeah, which shows a real attempt at genuine accessibility. It's not just theoretical.
It's like a restaurant menu for government secrets. You can see what exists before you even order.
That's a great way to put it. But to place that order, you have to use a prescribed form. You can't just send an angry email.
And I'm assuming there are fees involved.
Of course. And if a search is going to take a ton of hours, the information officer can actually demand a deposit of up to 1/3 of the access fee.
Ah, to stop people from just requesting millions of pages and bankrupting the department's time.
Exactly. It gives the requester some skin in the game.
Right. But what about accessibility? I saw that if someone is illiterate or maybe has a disability, they can make an oral request.
Yes. And the officer must physically sit down and reduce that oral request to writing for them.
That is incredible. They act as your scribe.
They have to. The Human Rights Commission was even tasked with compiling a user-friendly guide within 18 months of the section starting, just to help people navigate all this.
It's amazing that the law recognizes its own complexity. So say I pay the fee, I submit the form, how long do I wait? It's like a ticking clock, but with bureaucratic snooze buttons.
Usually 30 days. They can get a single 30-day extension for really complex searches.
And if they just ignore you, which, let's be real, is a classic bureaucratic move.
Well, the act anticipated that. If they ignore you, it's called a deemed refusal.
A deemed refusal. So silence equals a formal no.
Yes. And because it's a formal no, you instantly get the right to appeal or take them to court.
That's brilliant. It weaponizes their own stalling tactics against them.
Exactly. And if a record genuinely doesn't exist, they can't just shrug and say, we lost it. They have to provide a sworn affidavit detailing everywhere they searched.
Wow. So lying about losing a file becomes perjury.
Precisely.
Okay. So you filled out the form, waited your 30 days. Do they have to give you the record? Because obviously there are legal shields, right? They can formally refuse.
Oh, yes. They have quite a bit of legal cover if they need it. The act breaks refusals into 2 categories, mandatory and discretionary.
Meaning they must refuse versus they may refuse.
Exactly. For mandatory refusals, they have to protect the personal privacy of a third party. They have to protect South African Revenue Service records tax stuff.
Makes sense.
Also trade secrets, police dockets in active bail proceedings, and legally privileged documents.
Okay, so a massive protective perimeter. What about the discretionary ones?
They may refuse if it harms the economic interests of the Republic or international relations, or if a request is just manifestly frivolous or vexatious.
Right, to stop someone requesting the city's paperclip inventory just to be annoying. But, okay, here's where it gets really interesting. When you look at the national security and law enforcement provisions, there's this concept that's basically a Schrodinger's record.
Ah, yes, under sections 39.3 and 41.4.
Right. If acknowledging a record exists would endanger law enforcement, they can refuse to even confirm or deny its existence.
What's fascinating here is the meticulous balancing act. The drafters knew that sometimes just confirming a document exists is a massive security threat.
Like telling a cartel you have a file on their specific smuggling route.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you say, we have it, but we're not giving it to you, you've just tipped them off.
Mm-hmm.
So neither confirm nor deny is the only safe answer.
But institutions love to overclassify stuff. If a 100-page report has 1 classified paragraph, do they get to hide the whole document?
No, they don't, because of a rule called severability.
Severability? Like physically cutting it out?
Literally, yes. If a document has both safe and protected info, they must black out the protected parts and disclose the rest.
Okay, but what if the secret they are protecting is hiding something truly dangerous? Like, a company uses the trade secret shield, but that secret is a chemical formula that's poisoning a local river.
Now you're talking about the ultimate legal trump card in the act.
Yes. The mandatory disclosure in the public interest. I call it the break glass in case of emergency clause.
That's exactly what Sections 46 and 70 are. Despite almost all the grounds for refusal, trade secrets, confidentiality, whatever, an information officer must grant access if two things happen.
Let me guess. One, it reveals a massive crime or a serious public safety risk.
Yes. Evidence of a substantial contravention of the law or an imminent serious public safety or environmental risk. And two,
the public interest clearly outweighs the harm of disclosure.
You got it. It forces the information officer to act as a moral arbiter.
That is a heavy burden for, like, a mid-level corporate officer.
It really is. They have to sit there and weigh corporate ruin against public safety. It ensures confidentiality can't be used as a cloak for criminality.
So the shield just shatters. You can hide your trade secrets all day, but if you're poisoning the river, it's over.
Exactly.
But wait, we've focused a lot on the requester and the institution. What if the record being requested is about you? Like, you're just an innocent bystander whose data is caught in the crossfire.
The Act is very careful about third-party protections. If an officer intends to release a record with a third party's info, they must notify that person within 21 days.
Oh, so you get a heads up.
Yes. And then you, the third party, have 21 days to either consent to the release or make representations as to why it should be refused.
And if the officer still decides to release it against your wishes?
You can appeal. There's a whole internal appeals process for public bodies and eventually the courts.
And what if someone just shreds the document to avoid all this?
That brings us to the cost of defiance. The Act has real teeth. Destroying, concealing, or falsifying a record to deny access is a criminal offense.
A real crime, not just a fine.
It carries up to 2 years of imprisonment.
2 years. Okay, so what does this all mean? When you step back, you really see the tension here.
Definitely.
You have this fundamental right to know, to break down that wall we talked about. But at the same time, others have the right to intervene before their secrets are just handed over.
And that's why knowledge is most valuable when it's understood and applied. The appeals process, those criminal penalties, they ensure this act isn't just symbolic.
It enforces accountability. So to bring this journey to a close, we've gone from the dark days of pre-1994 secrecy to a constitutional right. We've looked at the strict 30-day timelines, the shields of refusal, and that ultimate trump card of public safety.
It's an incredible legal framework.
And for you listening, wherever you are in the world, this tug of war between institutional secrecy and the public's right to know is playing out every single day in your local governments and your workplaces.
It really is the universal struggle of the information age.
Yeah. Which leaves me with a final, somewhat provocative thought for you to mull over.
No.
The Act defines a record regardless of its form or medium, right? Paper, tape, whatever.
Right. Any medium.
But as we move deeper into this era of, like, encrypted, ephemeral messaging think texts that auto-delete after 10 seconds and AI-generated decisions that leave zero traditional paper trail.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
How will future generations even know a record exists to be requested in the first place? You can't break down a silent bureaucratic wall if you can't even see the wall anymore.